The children and youth and religious education volunteers will be making friendship bracelets today in Artworks. But before you depart, I would like to tell everybody here a little history of our congregation. So this is a bit about where we have been. The First Unitarian Church of Sacramento was established in 1868 when 17 families came together as its first members. The church had services by ministers from the Bay Area and beyond, and then we had our own ministers. We also had weekly meetings of the Women's Alliance, which started in 1911, but we did not have a home of our own for the first 35 years. This is a picture of the Metropolitan Theater. For Sunday services, we rented space in places like this, downtown in Sacramento. And here's another place, the hall of a fraternal organization called the Knights of Pythias. The Pythian Castle is where we worshiped. But in 1915, the congregation bought its own land and built a church in Midtown on 27th Street between N and O Streets. We were there in that spot for 45 years. Like other kinds of congregations, during the post-war baby boom, this church kept growing. In 1956, we bought this land way out here in the country, 5.5 acres on a former horse farm. We started building in 1959, and it was finished in June of 1960. It sat exactly where we are right now. In the middle 1960s, we built the religious education wing, which is over there. 50 years later, we adopted a master plan for the building and grounds. We donated money for a building project, and we borrowed from a bank, and we expanded this space and added to it. Using the shell of our old building, the inner walls were taken down to give more space in here. We completed that work in 2015 and moved back after 13 months worshiping someplace else. We added the welcome hall and the offices and a new projector and speakers and new chairs, a commercial kitchen, and spacious new restrooms. Outside, we have new landscaping, which you can help with weeding this week. The congregation has made all these changes to have more suitable space for all of our activities. But the people who did this work also wanted to be able to welcome any children, youth, or adults who might come here, to welcome any visitor wondering if they might find a home here at UUSS. For nearly 150 years, we have been a place of hospitality, service, music, and worship. For all this time, we have been a place to call home. I am glad that you are all here today. Thank you.
When my husband and I moved to Sacramento 12 years ago this month, this church was not the only UU community in town. UUSS was big, well-established, having been around for over a century, and a bit intimidating. In contrast, UU Community Church was less than 20 years old, and it was a bit scrappy, occupying a corner of a room rented from a Christian church on the south side of town. Their beloved settled minister had just moved away to the East Coast a few weeks before our arrival, but UUCC had a charming intimacy. It was immediately approachable. From our first day, we felt nurtured by their lay leaders, some of whom are in here, in this room today. When we later became members of UUCC, it was an exciting time. The church just moved into its sparkling new rented home that was exclusively for its use. Soon thereafter, Reverend Martha Hodges was enthusiastically installed as our new settled minister. Word apparently spread quickly about how great she is with children, and we began welcoming new families nearly every week. Within a year after Reverend Martha joined us, our two religious education classrooms were nearly bursting at the seams, and our overall membership had set a new record at nearly 100 people. Fred and I were in the right place. With our new own families 2,000 miles away, our fellow UUCC members became our family of choice. Together, we held a 90th birthday party celebrating four of our members. When same-sex marriage became legal in California, the church held a wedding for five couples, including for Fred and me. When I lost my job soon after the recession hit, our little community became a godsend, providing me opportunities to serve as chalice circles, serve in daytime discussion groups, serve as worship associate, and on Reverend Martha's Committee on Ministry, and eventually on the board. As the recession dragged on, however, it took its toll on the church itself. Our Sunday attendance and membership declined, and then our landlord evicted us. We found a new home within a welcoming Midtown church, but logistical challenges and the greater economic climate were too great to save us. In June 2014, we tearfully ended our relationship with Reverend Martha and moved out of the Midtown church. But Fred and I and some of our fellow UUCCers still needed a liberal church community that was established enough to provide programs and services that we could contribute to and benefit from. For us, UUSS was the logical choice. And as many of you may recall, you literally welcomed us with open arms. We're back at it here at UUSS. Fred and I participate on committees. We purchase and donate service auction items. I facilitated two spiritual deepening circles. And once again this morning, I sincerely express my honor and gratitude in serving as your worship associate. You are our family of choice, and you are bigger and better than ever. As an epilogue, many of you may remember I mentioned my time with UUCC in a reflection I gave a year ago, and how a dedicated group of its members chose to continue the values and traditions after its restructuring. Sadly, UUCC was not able to grow satisfactorily, and so last month it conducted its final service. Some of the new faces you'll see walking in our doors here may be its former members. I hope you'll join me in once again welcoming them with open arms.
During my recent sabbatical, I finished writing a cultural and historical study of this congregation. My general time frame was the 1980s and 1990s. Under the guidance of my dissertation advisor at the Pacific School of Religion, I studied UUSS archives and interviewed several members. A sabbatical is thought of as a minister's time away from church. But in those months, I was immersed in the congregation's culture and history. I wrote at a desk in the corner window in my bedroom with boxes of paper around me. I spent every day with our archives and slept with them at night. Thank you, Shirley Hines. She is our former archivist. The result was 9 chapters, 300 pages, 470 footnotes. Some parts are academic, other parts dramatic. You are welcome to read the whole thing. Today, I'd like to highlight the journey that the congregation has taken from patterns of animosity to a renewed practice of shared community. UUSS used to be a splintered congregation. We were an association of individual interests, of separate factions, of silos. We grew into a community held by covenant as by the strands of a web of interdependence. The 1980s and 90s were a time of growth and activity for UUSS, not unlike this time. Amazing things were going on. A public forum every Sunday with noted speakers on significant issues. An active UUSS Women's Alliance. our Theater One company producing plays as it had since the early 60s on this stage. We had many activity groups and social events, lots of parties. It was an era of activism and energy. Unfortunately, it was also a time of mistrust among members, lay leaders, clergy, and staff members. An adversarial culture is reflected in reports, meeting minutes, and correspondence, and it's recalled by lay leaders from that era. Another lens for me to look at that era was found in the reports of several interim ministers at UUSS. Coming with a fresh perspective, an interim is a transitional minister, like a consultant serving 1 or 2 years while a congregation prepares to find and call a new settled minister. Back in 1970, Josiah Bartlett served in that role. He had served several congregations, and he had been the president of our seminary in Berkeley. Bartlett said that we were a large and talented congregation. We had unlimited potential, but we appeared to be stuck in a rut. There was apathy, frustration, and animosity among many members here. Such a pattern, he said, was not the creation of any single minister or board. Our habits of being were so ingrained, so pervasive, that we could not even see them. This, I think, is a definition of culture. Habits, patterns, attitudes, and ways of being which are so familiar that you don't notice them. You don't notice. When unhealthy patterns are pointed out, you don't know how to change them. Bartlett said that it would take effort to become conscious of our patterns, and more effort to break through them. That was 1970. Future interim ministers would make similar statements 15 years later, 20 years later, and 30 years later. A few notable observations by Bartlett from 1970. He said this church gave off the impression of middle-aged, middle-class whites listening to sermons or interesting discussions and little else. No clear sense of purpose. He said our lay leadership had a reputation for resistance to change. At the heart of the problem, Bartlett said, was the either-or mentality of our stakeholders, people who pit my program versus your program. And what was lacking was an explicit loyalty to our congregation, a sense of shared commitment. Bartlett urged us to refurbish unattractive rooms and reduce clutter on this campus. We needed to catch up on deferred maintenance. Now, what is notable is that our building was only 10 years old when he said that. In 1984, Aaron Gilmartin served as an interim minister here. Gilmartin observed that lay leaders felt overburdened and underappreciated, and there was still work to be done. They made exhortations for more volunteer help. What is striking to me is how large the congregation was back then, 500 members. Gilmartin asked, "Can you imagine the richness of talents and skills, experience and knowledge that a congregation like this must possess?" He offered his diagnosis of the problem: a lack of real and felt connections among the members and leaders. Most members are not invited to help out, he said, because they are not known. The first step, he said, is getting to know people we do not know. Really getting to know them. And because we really want to know them, not just use them. End of quotation. It can be tempting to pin such a culture on one minister or another, or on the actions of particular lay leaders. But as tempting and easy as that might seem, doing so ignores the power of culture and habit. in the records of committee and board activities from 1983 to 1990, there is little evidence that this was a religious community. It was like a membership organization, an association of interested groups. In hindsight, it seems that the congregation was looking to the secular culture to model its ways of working and governing and interacting. It was a managerial culture. Whatever might or might not have been heard from the pulpit, the internal correspondence has nearly no use of words like trust, covenant, forgiveness, patience, imperfection, compassion, or gratitude. To be sure, appreciation was expressed for hard workers, for those who devoted themselves in service to the church. Yet there are many more examples of concern for close adherence to parliamentary procedure, thorough documentation, and orientation to task. In 1989, Interim Minister Eileen Karpeles led a workshop to focus on the role of committees in building a spirit of belonging and a spirit of mutual trust in the congregation. The impulse to task orientation, she said, must be resisted until the members and friends have a greater sense of cohesiveness. The process for gaining this cohesiveness, Karpeles said, is simply learning techniques for dealing with one another less rancorously. Judy Bell recalled that lay leaders sometimes did not explain their decisions as well as they might have before making changes. That may be understandable, as there was a climate of criticizing those volunteer leaders unkindly and of second-guessing the Board of Trustees. Ginny Johnson said, "There was a sense among some people that if you hadn't been here a long time, your opinion didn't matter." Indeed, three of the women I interviewed spoke about one man, one lay leader, who was controlling and aggressive and not open to others' perspectives, especially newer people's perspectives. Ginny was a young woman then, and she stood up to him. "Hey, mister, my opinion matters just as much as yours does." She didn't say, "Hey, mister," she said his name. So how did we get from there to here, to this present experience of shared commitment? Two of the primary ingredients, among many ingredients, two are courage and covenant. In the late 1980s, the congregation began looking at the ways people communicated, especially how members expressed disagreement. With support from interim ministers Eileen Karpeles, Douglas Morgan Strong, and many volunteers, UUSS held workshops about how personality styles differ and interact, and about group dynamics, and about listening to understand rather than to refute others. And if those methods wouldn't work, then how to remain steady, how to remain steady when tempers flare and words fly. Participation in these activities are evidence that our congregation was trying to learn better ways of working together. In the 1990s, this work was formalized in the Communication and Conflict Management Committee. It hosted regular workshops and monthly conversations about issues of concern or confusion in UUSS life, ways to clear the air. A trained conflict management team offered facilitation between members who had a misunderstanding or who felt hurt by other members or by staff or the minister. These efforts at reconciliation and congregational self-understanding laid a foundation that was necessary. Our lay leaders began to speak frankly and act with courage for the health of the congregation as a whole. In the mid-1990s, a new member got very involved in the life of the congregation. first as a volunteer, then as an outspoken critic, and then as an insatiable source of demands of the clergy and lay leaders. He refused to hear feedback on his behavior, would not accept the word no. For example, he would use the church equipment and its paper to make 400 copies of his letters to the members, and then he would drive those letters to fellow members' homes or places of work. Yet he found some traction in the church by raising the principle of the freedom of speech and of dissent. Yet such a defense neglected the principle of protecting members from harassment, verbal assault, or his trespassing on their property. In a long, hard, complicated series of events, the trustees expelled him from UUSS membership. On appeal by his advocates in the congregation, the board reconsidered his case, but then reaffirmed its decision. Its lawyer instructed him to stay off the premises. When he continued in violation of that, he was arrested right here on Sunday morning. And you thought our fire ceremony was dramatic worship. Of course, different members have different recollections and different opinions about all of the measures taken to stop his behaviors, such as how much limitation on him was too much or too soon, or how much was too late. Of course, there are different perspectives in a diverse community, yet our leaders are charged with caring for the health and well-being of the congregation as a whole. They are nominated for, elected to, and entrusted with this role. Excessive time and energy spent in responding to the relentless criticism and boundless exhortations of one faction or one person are time and energy not available for taking initiative on any larger goals or purposes of the congregation, including the oversight of infrastructure, fundraising, and strategic planning, let alone time and energy for a lay leader's family life or spiritual practice for renewal. This crisis was one of two from the 1990s, which I see as a turning point in the culture of this congregation. And here's the next one. By 1997, tensions were growing around the minister who had been called and settled 6 years earlier. Gifted in intellect and creativity, he had a strong start at UUSS, but his habits of defensiveness, impatience, and anger erupted into a crisis. His actions led to member and staff resignations. Some people wanted him to stay so we could work things out, but many others had lost faith in the relationship. Amid so much disagreement and so much confusion, our board of trustees told him to resign and negotiated a severance agreement with him. The Communication and Conflict Management Committee facilitated a series of listening circles for our members. These were called Steps Toward Healing. These meetings invited people to speak from the heart, to speak from their experience about the minister and other issues, and to listen to one another's experience and perspectives. After that minister's departure, we were served by the Reverend Dr. Shirley Rank. Shirley had started here only months earlier as our half-time pastoral care minister. But for the next year and a half, her ministerial work increased exponentially because she was the only one here as clergy. In 1999, the board hired a married co-ministry couple to provide a year of interim ministry during our ministerial search, and that was Sidney Wild and Dennis Daniel. With their collaborative style and their encouragement, UUSS resumed its earlier work toward a covenant. In January of 2000, Sidney invited the members to participate in a series of workshops. She said that this work would lead to a covenant of mutual respect and support, a covenant of behavior which honors the worth and dignity of all our members and friends. She stressed that members of a community need to cultivate an awareness that everything we do affects the lives of others. That's good for life in general, to cultivate an awareness that everything we do affects the lives of others. While the congregation would be articulating other visions and goals in later months and years, she said, a covenant of right relations is the necessary foundation for success. In the final analysis, she said, how we treat one another makes all the difference. Over a series of workshops, forums, sermons, and newsletter articles, the congregation drafted a statement of covenant. Church members adopted it by vote and ritualized it in a signing ceremony. The center of our faith and the heritage of our Unitarian Universalist tradition is covenant. A covenant is how the members understand our mutual support and our presence for one another. A covenant is a statement of interdependence and trust in one another. As a congregation took these steps toward right relationship, it called a new minister. The Reverend Doug Kraft discerned in this congregation the stirrings of health and a heart of love. That was in 2000. And in Doug's first several months, the congregation discerned and proclaimed its mission and values to accompany the covenant adopted before his arrival. Members recall that Doug listened to people, and he loved them into listening to one another. In a church based on a covenant and not on a creed, we are held together by our connections. We cannot connect if we cannot communicate. One way that Doug promoted listening at the level of the heart was by launching a small group ministry program called Ministry Circles, known in some UU churches as covenant groups. The most historic change of that era was the adoption of the long-range plan in 2008. This took several conversations and retreats among members and lay leaders and clergy. Congregation members voted in 2008 to adopt our 5-year goals, and the vote was unanimous. And then we achieved our goals in those 5 years. And you are sitting in the result of one of those goals. The building project was hard work, but it was not the work of a lonely few. It was a shared effort. That long-range plan was a sign of our shift away from habits of animosity and factionalism and pessimism. It was a sign of trust. Moreover, the actual work of making the long-range plan was part of the process of learning to trust, to listen, to dream, imagine, be creative together. And that process yielded so much energy and confidence and optimism that we're going to do it again. Stay tuned. Stay tuned. And see your August newsletter for details. Doug Kraft concluded his ministry at the end of 13 years of service here, the longest ministerial tenure in half a century. in contrast to the complicated or painful endings of several earlier ministries. His retirement was marked by standing ovations at both his farewell party and his final service. I need not recount today examples of the vitality of our congregation in the present moment. If you've been around, you have been part of the new and renewed activities for building community and reaching out in service and solidarity and giving generously to support our mission and extend our impact. If you are new, we hope you'll hang around and look around at all the opportunities here and at the people here and get to know us just as we seek to know you. My dissertation advisor asked me this question: what lessons can any other congregation take from the journey that our congregation has made in the past few decades? Our recent success and our vitality can be traced to the attention that the people here gave to a clear mission and our loyalty to the congregation's guiding values. Our health comes not from an orientation to task, but an orientation to trust. Together, we have created a web of mutual dependence. We sustain this web of community through spiritual practices of shared support, respect, empathy, generosity, and love. The covenant has held us together, and the mission has called us forward. Let us be grateful for the web of love, creativity, and courage, which continues to hold us together. So may it be. Blessed be, and amen.